So here we are. We're talking with Mike Honda here in his campaign office. And Mike, I put off talking with you because it's a long campaign. It's a long election. It's this goes on till November. But there's an event that you're going to be honored, or you're going to be a special guest, the Korematsu Institute, Fred Korematsu Day. How important is that to you? The whole idea of being honored by or being a special guest at the Korematsu Institute.
Oh, I knew Fred, and you know, growing up here in the valley, and then knowing about his history, and then going through Peace Corps, and coming home, and then getting involved politically. It's kind of a long-term appreciation of what Fred had done. And when I taught Asian American history, you know, the three guys who challenged the U.S. government and the military and the executive order, you know, it showed what kind of folks they were. And they were independent thinkers, and they understood what their rights were, and they understood the guarantees of the Constitution. And so that's the kind of mindset that I would like to be able to have. And I just admired him, and I just, when I used to see him at different functions, him and his wife, it was pretty cool just to see him. And, you know, you look at him and you say, you know, he's a quiet, humble-looking guy, but inside is, backbone of steel.
Fighter, a real fighter.
Yeah.
And so, special celebration every January now, Fred Korematsu Day. They're trying to make it national. It's state by state they're going. It's important to Asian Americans. And what's your message to the people on that day, on that special celebration day?
Well, I think it would be parallel to the 4th of July, the Day of Remembrance, where President Roosevelt had put out the Executive Order 9066 to commemorate a moment of our history in this country as Asian Americans, one, but commemorate also and promote the U.S. history and lesson that we need to continuously teach and reteach about what happens to a country when the citizenry allows a government to go amok and set aside the Constitution and target certain people or individuals solely because out of fear or racial prejudice or exhibiting the lack of political leadership. And Korematsu Day says all these things should not happen, and it should be really well-versed in your rights and your constitutional rights.
Do you think that, given the things that have happened in the last, in recent history, do you think that people have too often forgotten that things like the internment happened, and that people like Korematsu did stand up and fight, stand up to it?
Well, since 9/11, I think the lesson that we learned as Nikkeis, and having fought for H.R. 442 and the apology, had, number one, really put into our DNA, the Japanese-American DNA, when these things happen, we know immediately what to do, is to stand up and be counted and stand next to those who would be targeted because of some tragedy or some national attack, and that we don't allow people to profile communities or individuals. That was the first lesson, and it was exhibited. It was well learned, and it demonstrated itself the day after 9/11 by the Japanese American Citizens League and other groups. On a broader sense, many people understood what it was that the JACL was doing, and people who believed in the constitutional rights of all citizens, they understood because they heard about the lessons or they heard about the incident, and 9/11 sort of brought to bear on a real personal basis what it really means. So our Japanese-American experience became an American lesson, constitutional lesson.
And now you broaden it out and include all. You stand next to all who may be targeted, and that's an important lesson to keep remembering.
Yes, it's to all unconditionally, because the Constitution doesn't make any conditions.
All right, let me ask you about your own personal experience as an intern camp survivor. When you get honored as a special guest by the Korematsu Institute, does that bring back some memories about, you know, what you went through as a young boy?
Well, there's a couple of feelings that run through my mind. One is the appreciation of what the Issei's and the Nisei's I really had to go through and put up with. Then it brings to mind when I was of college age, when we used to ask, why didn't you fight back? So, which really forced us to understand the social political milieu that our community they found themselves in. And so, the response of the community makes more sense. The idea that should it happen again is the other sentiment, and the answer to that is not on my watch. And so this kind of event evokes all those feelings and the personal growth that my generation went through. And I'm the oldest of that generation, though, because our generation really spans a lot of ages. But it also says that it requires us to be constantly on our toes, because it could be any little thing that could impose a unwanted incursion in our own privacy and in our constitutional rights, even if it were shrouded in the clothing of government. We have to challenge even, and I say our own institutions, and keep them at bay. So the whole idea is that as a policymaker, as a congressman, it reminds me that I take an oath to the Constitution, not to our government. And so that really is another aspect of if we take an oath with the Constitution and not to the government, if the government goes awry, we have, as citizens, the responsibility to correct it.
Tell me about, though, the personal memory of being in an internment camp.
Yeah.
I guess that comes up, too, huh?
Well, it comes up in different ways. I was just about 1 year old, so the only thing that was offensive about me as a Japanese American was my diapers, But what it really did force me to do is ask questions of my parents. What happened? What was it like? But it really initiated itself when I was about 6 or 7. I would share dreams with my parents over dinner, and I would describe this scenario in my mental dream videotape of seeing certain kinds of things. And my mother would look at me like, this is a strange kid, man. He remembers stuff that happened, but he was too young. And I always saw it, I could remember seeing it at the level of a child. So everything, it was ankles and knees and everything on the ground. And my
it was still bad, huh?
Well, it was incidences like seeing a snake trail in the dust that goes underneath the barracks, or peeping through the door, sitting on the wooden stoop, seeing my uncle working out. And my mother would say, yeah, that's your Uncle Roy, And my parents would explain what it is that I dreamt. And so I said, oh, okay, and then I'll leave it at that. But I still can remember my mother saying, this kid's really strange. She said that in Japanese, And then that gave the opening for my father and my mother to talk about their experiences. My uncles would visit in Chicago after the war in their uniform. Mm-hmm. And but my father was also involved with the military intelligence service, and he would show me pictures of his classes that he taught of naval intelligence officers in Boulder, Colorado, at the university there. And then having been transferred from there to Northwestern University in Chicago, and that's the answer to the question, how did we end up in Chicago? So a variety of folks with certain skills, Japanese language skills, were recruited to teach Japanese or to learn Japanese better and become interpreters out in the South Pacific. And so when you start to talk to different people, you start to piece together this jigsaw puzzle of what really happened.
So as a one-year-old, though, that was your beginning, and it led to a life where you're trying to piece together the internment camp story. And I guess the Korematsu story gives you a very important chapter of the guy who said no.
Well, yeah. When you become an adult and people say, you can't do this, or you're subject to curfew, and you say, this is not right, I know my rights, and you challenge that. In the context of 1942, challenging the military, the government, after Pearl Harbor, that took, you're going to have to delete this. That took balls, man.
Yeah. Oh, the guts, yeah.
Yeah, it took a lot of intestinal fortitude and a sense that he could not be shaken from his idea that he is right and the country's wrong.
And that's why I remember Fred Korematsu.
Oh, yeah. This weekend.
Yeah, the man of steel that, you know, and he's got that gentle smile, you know, so.
But in wrapping up this section, do you think people have forgotten, too many people have forgotten that story, the internment camps, what happened to the Japanese Americans? Do you think that really makes it essential or important that we keep telling this story and that we?
Yeah, in the context of curricula and teaching young people U.S. history, there's a lot of ways that you can teach U.S. history without going chronologically only, that there's strands of things you can teach in terms of values, the kinds of stance that people take based upon principles, all the way through from the time of the landing of the pilgrims to today, that you can pull out different people through history to talk about them in the same context as a strand. And I think that we're not being creative enough in our education to create curricula that would constantly teach and reteach these kinds of things so that this kind of sense of self and a sense of responsibility and citizenship becomes ingrained and internalized by our youngsters. We have to do that in our schools.
And that's part of what the Korematsu Institute is trying to do. So Mike, thank you for that.